You are listening to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I'm an Extension educator. In this podcast, we'll continue our conversation about racial injustice through the voices of youth and young adults. In the previous two podcasts, we first learned about youth programming that provided a platform for youth to discuss issues of race and racism in episode 57 called Let's Talk About Race. Then we heard from two young people who shared their experiences in these programs and shared how it impacted them in episode 58, Hmong American Youth Talk About Racial Injustice. Now, in this podcast, I have the opportunity to visit with Quincy Poe on his perspective of how to address racial injustice through youth voice. Quincy, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for having me here today. I'm so excited to have the opportunity to be on the podcast.
It is my pleasure to have you on. Let's start off with your experiences as a young person. Would you be willing to share a little bit about your experience with 4-H and then how it ties into the work that you're doing now?
Absolutely. So I started in 4-H when I was eighth grade, middle school. So way, way, way back when. And that's when we were urban 4-Hers. So we really worked in our communities on what it meant to have gun violence in your community, what it meant to have a youth and adult partnership, and how to work together to build community. And so going to DC and learning about ethanol and gun control, but also talking about the real issues and the things that our senators and our representatives have to talk about when they're in those chambers. And so that really brought a different perspective and wanted and made me want to get more involved in our community and what that meant. And that's what racial justice is to me, is that equal opportunity for everyone to be involved in their community and on different levels, especially for youth to be involved and to understand what you're growing into and what you're getting yourself into as you grow, and understanding how that impacts your life. And so that's where I kind of got started in the Silence for Violence crew.
You mentioned the Silence for Violence crew. Tell us more about that.
There was a lot of gun violence going on in our community when we were in middle school, and we didn't really understand what that meant, because a lot of communities outside of our community that weren't in the city or big cities didn't have that as much as we had that in our communities. And so how do we have this conversation where we can silence the violence in our community, lessen it, make it completely disappear, but also build community so that we're continuously working together to silence the violence? And so myself and a few other young, amazing people that I still have relationships with now formed this group, and we came up with Silence of Violence as our 4-H group name because it meant a lot to us to silence the violence that was going on in our community.
And what are some of your accomplishments?
We had built this presentation that we got to present at the state fair, and it was what we were doing in our communities, the surveys that we were going around. We were talking to the different youth and doing outreach, not just in our community, but in our school too, and the youth that lived in our community. You need? What, how do you feel about what's going on? Let's have a conversation about it and then talk about ways on how we can add to the impact of positive change. And so after, like, we talk about that, when we went to Washington, D.C., those were the conversations we were having with our senators and with our legislators. This is what's going on in our community. This is what we need to change. So this, we need to be figuring out how we can strategically change this in a way that not only we're all going to be involved and engaged, but it's going to be positive. And so having those conversations, but extending those conversations outside of the community. And I had an opportunity to go to Japan because I took the language in high school, and I brought that presentation to Japan. And, you know, do you have this in your communities over here? This is what it's like in some of our communities. And we're trying to find different ways. We had to find different ways. How can we strategically address this? It was beautiful because it brought a lot of us together, but it built those youth and adult partnerships. And we know from youth and adult partnerships, it brings positive and lasting change.
That is really impressive, Quincy. Okay, so your involvement in that urban 4-H group, that started you on a platform for your involvement in racial justice.
Yes, precisely. It honestly made me more aware, but it made me more curious to why a lot of this is happening and why are we not having these conversations more? Why are we not engaged more? Why are we not trying to engage and involve everyone? Because these are huge things. And it's not just things that's going to impact the next generations, but it's what's impacting us now in our current and our present time. And so how do we address this strategically to where we can move past this and build community, but build a lasting and positive change?
Can you tell us about the work that you're doing now? Because you are now a young adult. You are, as we mentioned earlier, an alumni of the 4-H program. Tell us about the work that you're doing now, how you're engaging young people in the work that you did when you were a young person yourself.
Yes. The work that I'm doing now, I work for Youth Link as a special project intern right now. And the special project that we have that we're developing is inserting youth voice into every programming and every part of development in the agency, right? So what does that look like? Not just bringing you to the table, but also engaging them and allowing them to lead conversation, engaging them and allowing them to advise on what these policies or the services that they need. And so strategically structuring a program that allows the youth to be able to not only sit at the table, but have a table of their own, where they can say, this is what we need. These are the services that are working. I think that's important really in every aspect of everything that we do, because outside of just that agency, I do this just naturally in the conversations that I have with you. And downtown, I live not too far from the downtown area, and there's a lot of youth out because of COVID. A lot of them don't have a lot of places to go. So talking to these youth, what services do you need? You know, how can we help you in your situation right now? They'll tell you. They have no quarrel with telling you what they need. They'll let you know absolutely 100%. They'll let you know that they want mental health, that they want resources for housing, not just to be sustained in that housing or just to get that housing, but be sustained in that housing. So working through their mental health and from being in a crisis or from being in a constant mindset that's survival or that's in constant crisis. Absolutely. Every time I talk into a youth downtown, they've said, I need help with my mental health. That's huge to me because these are youth who are 16, 17, 20, who you wouldn't actually expect to say this, right? And so it's, what are we intentionally doing and how are we being intentional about our work, strategically structuring it in a way that we're bringing you to the table, but not just bringing you to the table. What are we doing to be strategic and how we're structuring not just bringing you to the table, but giving them their own table that they can really let us know what they need.
You know, what I really liked about what you were sharing there, like words that just jumped out at me, where it was intentional work with young people and that engagement with youth and adult partnerships. As I'm hearing you talk, I think, wow, Quincy, you are just the example of a young person who was involved in true youth voice and youth engagement, and that you were able to have those experiences that now have really gave you a springboard to the work that you're doing now and the person that you are today.
Thank you.
So for youth workers who want to have that kind of impact on young people, you know, we want more Quincy's, right? But I mean, you know, and I say that jokingly, but in all seriousness, we need to give more young people voice. We need to not just invite them to the table so that they're token youth who are sitting there so we can say that we were hearing from youth. What do you want youth workers to know about what they can do to advance racial justice through youth voice in their communities?
Believe in your voice. I think that's a huge part of the work that we do, is that sometimes we get away from our purpose. And a lot of that purpose is really believing in ourselves too, because how can we really help those youth if we're still working on a lot within ourselves? And I think sometimes we forget to take that step back to heal. It's okay to take a step back and be like, okay, let me humble myself. I need to heal in this moment so that I can move forward. And in this work, especially with dealing with a lot of crisis, with dealing with, you know, a lot of harm reduction, how do we also make sure that we are in the right mindset to help progress and move forward? I think another part of that is going back to not just giving youth a seat at the table, but allowing them to create their own table and then us taking seats at those tables. I think that's huge because we bring youth to the table and we tokenize them. We say, here's a talking stick. Once we take the talking stick back, we shape everything that they said into what we think fits, into what we think fits in the programming or what we think will make sense for grants. But we're getting away from that purpose, and the purpose is youth voice. So taking a seat at the youth tables and getting that raw, that raw feeling, that raw understanding of what they actually need. In this work, if we really want to center youth voice, we got to start to build these tables for youth, build these bridges for youth, because they will tell you, every youth worker knows that they'll be honest with you. It's about guiding them, helping them shape what that looks like. Because we have the resources and we're there to be their support or to help guide them. We have to allow them to lead. But even when you are out, and a lot of people young people that don't come to our organization really struggle with housing. It's a huge problem, but really it's that access. And again, when we talk about racial justice, is there that equal opportunity? Is there that access? You know, what barriers are in the way that are stopping this from happening and from these young people from accessing these resources?
One of the things that you mentioned is access. You know, let's be real about it. Not all young people have access to the table. Not all young people have the same ability to have their voice heard as others. How do you help those young people create their tables where they can have that voice?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, especially in this work now, because I used to be one of the young people getting a lot of services. I used to be a homeless young person and working through that survival. And so being on the side to where I'm helping the other young people get these services, I think a lot of time I think about me being that young person and what I needed. And a lot of times it was really that conversation on what I needed in that moment to be okay. And if these services were working for me. And we're not doing that when we bring young people to the table, because a lot of times those conversations are already outlined and it's that coercion that's already present. And so when we bring young people to the table, we're not seeing them in their raw and their full character and their full selves. And so like when I talk about allowing them to build tables for themselves, to me that looks like in the moment in the work that I'm doing, a lot of the leadership will say, well, you're the youth that, you know, we want to be in these board meetings. And I will rebuttal with, I'm not the youth that reflects this programming. I'm not the youth that is getting the services I used to be, but I'm not that youth now. And so how do we be intentional in the work we're doing by actually bringing youth that reflect the services that we're getting now, actually bringing them forth and allowing them to speak and allowing them to tell you what you need. And so stepping back, but for me, it's having that seat at the table and giving that seat away for the one who actually needs it and allowing them to build what that looks like for them. I'm very loud about what I need and I'm very direct about it a lot of times. And a lot of times it's so that other people can be able to find their way into that space, because there are quite a handful of young people that are in these different programs that are outspoken, that are loud, that will tell you what they need and reach for it and get it. And a lot of times they're tokenized and a lot of times they're stumbled over. And so how do we stop that is by not only opening that space, but being that advocate. A large part of the work that I'm doing now is not only allowing young people to build this table, to structure this program, to advise, to say, these are the services we need, but being there to be their backbone and say, hey, they're speaking. Hey, this is their table. They're saying what's going on because these are the ones we're servicing. It's okay to not have all the control. It's okay to allow the young people to actually say what they need without telling them what we think they need. That's okay. It's the beauty of conversation, but it's really the beauty of building those partnerships. That's how you create that trust. And that's how you create that bond, by allowing people to be vulnerable, be their raw selves. Listen to young people, allow them to build their tables. Another point I wanted to touch upon was re-educating ourselves. Because I think sometimes we get into our expertise on things and what we know, that we forget that a lot of times, especially in youth work, it's about, you know, learning in that current time. And we thought we knew that lived experience, a lot of times, especially in youth work, can replace what we thought we got out of that expertise or that research from school. And I think stepping back to humble ourselves and say, okay, this is what's going on. You know, I see this is happening. So how in this moment do I educate myself and make sure that I use this moment to progress and to impact something positive in the work that I'm doing? And I think that's a huge part of the youth work too, is that we're constantly learning. We're constantly being educated. And a lot of that is by the different lived experiences, because it's ever changing. why do we still have these 10 programs when I was in the program, when the need is very different? How are we engaging our youth? How are our models about youth voice when we're not actually doing anything to service youth in the way that they need to be served? And so educating ourselves, re-educating ourselves, it's okay to learn something new and grow from that.
What a great point, Quincy, because it's like you can't learn in a textbook. You can't learn from notes from what we did in the past of what a young person needs today.
Absolutely.
Quincy, listening to you talk through this podcast, I mean, you are truly an advocate for young people. And three things that I heard you share that I think are truly important are that you tell youth to believe in their voice and to believe in themselves. Secondly, that youth need to create their own table. Don't think about bringing youth to the table. Youth need to create their own table. And that just reminded me of something that I always need to be reminded of, is that if this youth program or if meeting the needs of the youth right now looks like how I thought it was supposed to, then I probably did something wrong, because it needs to look like how the young people think it should look. And then thirdly, what you just shared with us about re-educating ourselves, you know, I heard you say remembering what it was like when we were young, but then also continually re-educating ourselves on what the young people today need.
Absolutely.
So I thank you for sharing with us today in this podcast.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Now, for everyone listening today, please go to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth for research-based information and training opportunities for youth development professionals and volunteers. We now have a page called Understanding and Confronting Racial Injustice. Head on over to that page for more information. Thank you again, Quincy. This is Carrie Robidoux from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.